then I would like to introduce our speaker today. This is Christian. Christian loves to develop free software, and he also loves to tinker, I read, with different things. And one of these things he will talk about today is the web of things. And I think you also brought some examples what you can do with that, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that. Thank you, Christian.
Yay! There are going to be a lot of prototypes. Hopefully all of them work. Some of them rely on the internet. Hey. It's shenanigans with Web of Things. Web of Things, who has heard of Web of Things? One person? Okay. First I'll cover a little bit of what Web of Things is, and then I'm going to talk about some unusual use cases I've covered with IoT protocols, mostly then the Web of Things. First of all, whenever there's a new protocol or like a new standard, we gotta ask ourselves, hey, is this just another one to add to the list, or is it going to replace something? And I'm inside of a group who talks a lot about Web of Things, and one of our guidance people is Edgy. And when I said, hey, is this just another protocol or another standard to add to the list? He said, oh, please don't call it a protocol, because for him it's a paradigm. And I'm like, Edgy, I'm a developer. I cannot implement a paradigm. I need like a standard, something with a specification that I can like go down and implement endpoint by endpoint. But he said, yeah, you want to remove that misunderstanding, because first and foremost, it's not another protocol to add to the list. While there is a protocol, it's actually much more about the idea that we get a machine-readable way of declaring what a thing can do. That can be anything from like your smart bulb, your fridge, whatever. We describe it in a JSON format that documents semantics of what is this in the real world, like what does it relate to, also with the properties, like is it a light? And if it is a light, is that color going to change its main light, or is it like a secondary light? Is it actually a color? Because we're going to, like sometimes, depending on the values you send, you might not be able to tell that it is a color. So what we have are three main things. There are properties inside of the JSON description. Then actions and events. Properties are just anything that is read and write, like no fancy stuff, just read. Is the light on? Yes? Okay. We can also write to it, so like make the light turn on. Actions would be something like invoking functions. It could be a short-term function, something that is basically done the second you receive the response, or something that could be ongoing. For a more practical example, we're going to go back to the smart lamp, but then afterwards we're going to venture off into like use cases that you might not think about when thinking about IoT. But for the lamp, we have the properties that would be something like brightness and color. Actions would be fade, because that takes a while. And also, it has a state, we can cancel it, but we can also call it a bunch of times, and then what happens? Like, if we have multiple fade animations going at the same time, maybe the thing responds with, I can't do that, or it cancels another action. And then we have events that are like events that are triggered by the thing. You cannot really write to it. Actions are your way to trigger something, and events are the way for the thing to inform you of something, notify you, so that it restarted or overheated. These are usually then like one-time events in comparison to is it overheated would be a property again, because you can read it at any time that you would like. building a thing server, so something that emits like a Web of Thing protocol. Again, there is a protocol that comes with it, but it could be MQTT, it could be ZigBee, it could be anything that you already have. Usually works in the way that you build the thing, you define its thing description, and then you expose it to the network. And you repeat that step for every classification, every type of a device that you have. When you can generalize between different things, then you might group the thing description together. They can extend each other. You can also reuse individual properties from other things because it's JSON-LD, I think, is like the where you can link between different JSON documents so that you can become quite complicated in what you want to describe if you need the complexity. But if you want to keep it all in one JSON document, then yay. We'll go into demo time for the prototypes. These are now not anymore the smart lamp or something, but I have a few different ones. So first of all, I thought, like, what can I like do with this that is not just general light? I could have a virtual thing, for example, a Notes app. And inside of that Notes app, I have one action of create a note. It will give me back the URL of that note, and I can put that back into my address bar, and then I get the individual properties that make up a note. So here we have a fully virtual thing, something that is created on demand. So usually we have to discover something in the network, and then we can use it. Here it is created virtually on a server in RAM, basically, maybe written down for restarts. But it uses the same kind of protocol that you would use for the smart light bulb, just as a as a note-taking app. The benefit that we get through this is that it can be compatible with lots of consumers that already implement the Web of Things or existing software like the Home Assistant. If it supports string properties, then we can reuse this and put it in there. Can give it a title, Hello White, 2025. And if you would have the same URL open, and we'll try that in a second with other things, you would see the updates as they get streamed in. In the background, I'm using WebSockets here for the connection, but it could be another protocol again. Something HTTP-based is the best for internet use cases. If you have something local, use a local protocol. Now that we've seen how to interact with this by setting a title, let's see what the JSON document looks like. So we first have a context of, yes, this is like a web of thing. This is the description you would use in any case, regardless which protocol you're implementing it with. Down in the properties and in the actions and the events, you then describe which protocols can I use to access this. So first of all, we also have security definitions. That could be a bearer token or, depending on your protocol, what is needed. Describes how to authenticate with the thing to interact with it. Properties, here we see the title. And then we have the form where it tells you, hey, under this URL, you can push content to, described by, yeah, you can read this property and you can write this property. So that's how all of these individual properties here work. There we have it. And then there are a couple of, here I also store when it has been created and when it has been modified. I don't see an input next to it. That is because here in the JSON, you can probably already guess it, created is a read-only property. So sometimes we have things that are either really hard to write to, for example, like a temperature sensor. You cannot really write the temperature. It wouldn't make any sense. You can only read it. And then there are other things where you can only put stuff in, like only values in, but you can never read them because it would be too complicated for the thing to keep, like, get the state. And then you make it write-only. Next example. Ooh, that one might be something for later, because that I would like to try. Sudoku. This is a file generator, so I've started. First we had something with properties, here is something with an action. I like whiteboards and like online whiteboards where you collaborate, and then wrote a generator for like a Sudoku generator so you can play a Sudoku on the whiteboard. Here is again something with a web thing description where a thing responds. I just pick a difficulty, how many players, and what kind of symbols we want to use. Standard 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10. Not 10. And then I invoke that function, and what I will receive is a download. So the thing responded with a response that my client knows, oh, this is a download. I'm a web browser. I'm going to present this as a download. If your consumer, web of thing consumer, wants to do something different with that, like store it somewhere or just temporarily work with it, it could do that. Let's also have a look at that thing description. Here is, again, the action defined as get Sudoku. That's a title that I need to call. It has titles. In the previous thing, if I still have it open, we also see that this has support for multiple languages. We can give one title that is the default that's defined all the way at the top of the JSON, what the default language is for this document. But then I can provide different alternatives for other languages, all for the UI to show if this is presented to a human. The computer probably won't care, and just identifies the property or the action or the event by its ID. Back to the Sudoku, we have here also input properties. These are JSON schemas describing the value that I need to send in order to get an output. And the output is also defined. So here we have the properties is content, content type, file name, and then my client knows, oh, this is something I should present as a download. I built something Tamagotchi-like with that. So here we have an image, that's a property, usually used for something like a webcam. But here I have like a server that generates an image and will also update it when your pet is gets bored or is hungry. And then you can have like here a couple of properties, but also the interactions. So for, I think it was bored, so we can try to entertain it. That is an error because the pet needs to be awake. I think that is with feeding. So we'll feed it a couple of times, and then I think we can entertain it. Perfect. Still hungry. Well, the neat thing with this is also that, again, if you have the same URL on your machine, it's co-parenting a pet. So like a Tamagotchi that is immediately connected to everybody who can access it over the web. Could be internet, could be local net, depending on where your server is available from. Okay, let's go into demo time. Hopefully this works like real, real demo time. If you can scan that QR code. Should bring you to a website that's hopefully empty at the moment. Yeah, working, looking good, okay. Let's see if I can find it. Here we go. So the interface of that client that I built is also can be changed by here, for example, now I see everybody who's connected. We see more people who are connected. And then I can push something like this. And now everybody who's still connected and hasn't been failed by the Wi-Fi should be able to see a map, the same map that I see over here. And when I change the values, you can change these values too, then it will zoom out. Zooming in and out of the map won't work. You need to modify the JSON if you want to do that. Also, for easy interactions and total chaos, there are actions that will, like a couple of presets that will focus on specific areas, set a marker or remove all the markers. And it's all based on this JSON up here, where we define the center, the longitude, like center with latitude, longitude, zoom, and markers. So that way we can have collaborative map editing or like just viewing. Okay, next one. Okay. This is a game. It's it looks like Pokemon. It's not. I re-implemented a little bit of a walking simulator. It's a small map, and again, the thing with the web. I'll make it bigger for anybody who isn't connected through the phone. This is again a webcam, an image, and it's updated every time somebody changes their location. We can change the location by going up and down here. I think that's down, so I should be 2 times down. And yeah, people are walking around in this. Everybody gets their own thing to interact with. A thing in this sense is a player character. And with the actions, we can move. Actions are here again, the up, down, left, and right. Let's have another look at the JSON for this. That is not the correct one. Ooh, yeah, okay. That's why. Here it is. We have a thing that has a title of Trainer 1. Everybody else got like a different one that I was able to push through this controller. And all of this synchronization is all things on things on things that control what the UI looks like, what actions there are, what properties there are, and when these get updated. Here we have the image. It's a read-only one. Otherwise, you would be able to upload new images. That doesn't make any sense for when we want to see this character move around in the world. We're sending PNGs, and these are usually BASE64 encoded, but there's also, I think, here a raw one. Maybe that works. Can I just look? Yeah. Just with a web browser, I can also just look at this, just a snapshot. And what happened? I think now it should be empty for everybody and can also be like put back. Have fun with that one. Let's see if there are more demos. Ooh, this is a fun one. Remember the presentation that we abandoned? What if that presentation can be controlled by a... word? How does that work? I'm super confused. Web browser is also in full screen. Okay. Ah, perfect. So this is also a thing so I can control the slideshow with the wrench, that's my client. But I can also interact with the now I'm using the keyboard again to tap for next slide, and it will update the thing on the right, the interaction. We can see that the number here goes up and down whenever I switch slides. So they're both ways connected. What happens here is that there's like a thing on a server that is hosted on the internet that has these values stored, and both the client on the right as well as the presentation on the left are connected to the same server. They observe the values as they change, but whenever they think, hey, I need to update these, they push the updates to the server. For that, I built a server and a client. The server I've called WhatAnything. It's an extensible thing server with on-demand initialization of things. So when the presentation started, I had no idea how many people would participate in the demo. All of these have been created on the fly whenever like a new user calls a URL of, hey, I want trainer or the map number something something. The server will just create a new instance and inform the others that this now exists if it is relevant to them. What gets notified is all the custom logic that each application implements itself. And then WhatWrench, that is the client everybody has been running, and that I've also been using with the blue header. Mainly for me to test and debug things, it's a consumer. While these are very much, for me, meant to be run like or tested with each other so that I can continue my own adventures with Web of Things, these are compatible with other servers and other consumers of Web of Things. So if somebody has another consumer, they could use my server and interact with all the properties, actions, and events that they support. And if I get the URL to a server, then I can use my client to interact and debug their things. Another example, U-bikes. Going back to the real world, for now we've only looked at virtual examples. There are, I think, something like, I don't know exactly, several thousand public bike sharing stations in Taiwan. But there is one API that gives you back all of them and how many bikes are available. It looks something like this, so you would expect something like 30 bikes or so. Sometimes they're empty, sometimes they're full. It's also maybe relevant to you if they have electric bikes. So what I did is like create an application in web, what anything for it that will also like UBOX, and then an ID of the station. And as soon as I receive one of these requests, I will look it up on their API and see, does a station exist, and report back to you, yeah, it does exist, or no, it doesn't exist, and the properties that you can read. That is something, is there another one? Yeah, we can look at one. So here we have available bikes, 11. Nine of these are 2.0 bikes, and then two of them are also, no, yeah. And we get a location with that thing. And now, I've been telling, like, there are other clients that can implement this. While it's not released, and I'm working on this, there is another consumer that I've been building, which is a plugin for Home Assistant to see that. So here we have, again, these stations. If anybody knows more about Home Assistant plugins, I'm terrible at these. I need some help. Like, here are these are actually just three stations that I added, but they show up as seven because they have seven attributes. Is that intended? Is that not intended? Please let me know. So here we can see the same properties, available U-bikes, and this is currently 11. Get the same overview here as you would expect for other things maybe in your home. And then you can subscribe to things that are in your neighborhood. It all started with this demo where I was building a web of thing that queries OpenStreetMap, and you put in the node ID or the way ID of a thing that you're interested in, for example, a supermarket, and it would translate that to a thing that has opening hours. So you could go to like get the OpenStreetMap ID of your nearby library or your supermarket, and it would then expose to you in a way that you can import it into Home Assistant its opening hours, so you can use that for home automation. If you want to turn off and on lights based on that, I don't know. I haven't done that, but it sounded fun to experiment with. Do we have another one here? Nope, not for now. Then back to the presentation. The thing descriptions are usually something that you define in advance because you already know what your device look like. There is one use. What is this? Ooh, did I throw that out? Yes. There is ArtNet, which is lighting, professional lighting, probably also used over here. These look very much like they could be like DMX lights that you send messages to, how they, like what brightness, what color, everything. And let me bring that back so I can show it. No. Yes, usually professional lighting equipment for events and clubs, usually called DMX, but if you want to send that over IP, it's called ArtNet. And they have universes, which we could create as a thing. And then you get, like, one universe has 512 values that could be 0 to 1, I think, and they, or like 0 to 255 because they're all bytes. But you have no idea what this relates to because the lights need to be individually configured on what channel are they listening. They have a certain width, so if they listen to, like, if they have a brightness, a red value, a blue value, and a green value, then they would occupy four channels. They do not really coordinate that. You cannot configure that from like your administration software, but it's configured in the lights. And what we can do is then create on the fly a thing description for a thing that starts in universe, or like that is in universe one, starts on channel 19, and then has 10 channels. And it will generate that thing description for you. It's in the backend, the same channels that you received in the one thing that has all of the channels. So if you pull one slider here, out of the, for example, the one for channel number 19, it will also update that in the other thing for the entire universe. And if you know specifically what kind of device you have, then you can, for example, give it something like universe one channel starts on channel 19, and we know it's an MHX30 LED beam with in 10 channel mode. Sometimes they have different widths or different modes that they support. So I think this one has something where it supports either 10 channels or 13 channels. And based on all of that information and that it knows this specific model, it will create a thing description with named properties, like this is for the red channel, this is for the green channel, this is for an effect, this is the tilt, the spin. So a dynamic generator for thing descriptions. What do I want to tell you? Basically, that there is a lot that you can experiment with, both from like a home assist, like a, yeah, like home automation. There is smart city use cases, and there are virtual things that are just fun to interact with. That can all be built on these protocols. The great benefit that you get from adopting one of these protocols is that it synchronizes all of your interactions through the protocol. So like, for example, with the Tamagotchi, it's just like, okay, you're now co-parenting one pet together. Just by writing these thing descriptions, if both of you can access the same network resource. And it's all interoperable with different consumers and different servers. So that's why for the past 2 years, whenever I had a new application that I've been building, I usually try to expose a thing description so that it will be compatible with my client, so that I don't need to write a custom new UI interface for it, but can just use the UI generator that's already in WhatWrench. If you're interested in these two projects, they are both on GitLab. The URLs are inside of the description of this talk, as well as more things to just test out. There's like the smart city use case that I showed, or I don't know if it's smart city, it's just rental bike stations. Debugging, where it's like showing you basic property types, so that if you're building your own consumer, you can start with like checking that you've implemented these correctly. I've got other games like a dice. You can, like, there's an action of throw the dice, and then it will give you back a number. Had something like a D&D character sheet, that was fun. And different generators for whiteboards. That's it for the presentation, thanks so much. If you have any questions, please let me know.
Yeah, you can line up for questions either here or raise your hand and I'll come to you with the mic.
Yes. So one of the big benefits you mentioned is synchronization between multiple clients. That sounds like that's already achieved by a lot of IoT protocols. I'm mostly thinking of MQTT is what I'm comparing it to in my head. What seems to me to be new is the entire JSON description. Is that the main focus as well, or is that more of a side thing?
The individual protocols are not so much the focus. While there is a protocol that I've been using for these demos, that's HTTP or WebSocket based. Even the WebSocket one is like a custom edition that somebody from the wider community contributed. With every action, you can specify which protocol you can use to interact with it. So I think the main gain from Web of Things is the one JSON document that describes in a machine-readable way to your consumer, do I even have a chance of communicating with the thing? If it's MQTT and the client doesn't support that, then probably already out of luck. But as it's a form with like multiple entries, if your thing actually supports multiple protocols, then the consumer can go through them individually and check, hey, do I support that protocol? Do I support that sub-protocol?
So the Web of Things is really the JSON document, and then how you communicate is defined in the JSON, but it's not necessarily a Web of Things protocol.
No, the main Web of Things paradigm that Edu was talking about is are the thing descriptions.
Yes, okay.
The JSON documents that describe how to interact with it and can I interact with it.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Any more questions? Thank you, by the way, for this really intriguing talk. So many cool things you can do. Well, then I ask back, what ideas did people get that you can now do at your home? You can also stand up and let us know what intrigued you off the talk and what ideas you got.
One of the use cases that I will try to bring to the tent over here, we're at the CCCAC, that's for Aachen, the town in Germany close to the border of the Netherlands, and Belgium, I think, right at the free country border. There at the tent, I'll try to set up a receipt printer with an online service where you can like create images, upload your own images, and it will print that on the receipt printer that's available. But so far, I haven't had time to set up that demo. Hopefully tomorrow it will be ready. So come by the tent if you want to see that and more interactions with Web of Things, that client. Yo.
All right. If there are no questions left, then please one another applause for Christian, and thank you very much.
Thank you.